Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
That's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans and guest co-host Sean Dezay. You may have heard of his gym called Triumph MMA. He might be stopping by once every 6 weeks, as if it's some sort of fight camp, I guess. So welcome back, my friend.
Yeah, haters are going to hate. That's all I got to say.
Where have you been? No, I'm genuinely curious.
I've been working, guys.
Okay, I've
been working.
I didn't know. I thought maybe you had something cool going on.
No. I always got something cool
he
going
does
on.
He always have something cool going on.
You're the Kanye of the show.
You are the Kanye of the show.
Cool-ish because I do cool-ish.
Right,
and
right. Exactly. I'm here because I do cool-ish. Yeah. Sean Dezay. all right, so we got a lot of crazy stuff to talk about, which is interesting because the next fight is essentially next week, so there really shouldn't be that much to talk about other than Ultimate Fight Night 30. However, out of Ultimate Fight Night 30, apparently there was a Sharknado of crazy MMA news because the world got nuts. If you missed Ultimate Fight Night 30, Lyoto Machida made his debut against friend Mark Munoz, who we had on the show last week, and Mark tried to defend a head kick, but it, to quote Bruce Lee, if your technique is perfect, there is no defense for the perfect technique, and there wasn't, so he knocked him out cold. True to his word, Ken, as you asked Mark Munoz, they had made a bet. Whoever wins has to buy dinner. Lyoto did take Mark Munoz out to a very nice meal, so true to his word, they are back being friends. And
so the winner had to buy dinner?
The winner had
oh,
to
I
buy dinner.
Oh, I misunderstood his answer.
Yes, yeah, the
last
winner
week.
Had to buy dinner, so Machida took him out for dinner.
Well, I'm kind of glad, because yeah, Mark Munoz did not get his win bonus that night. I mean, we love him, but man.
I would have taken him to Ruth Chris.
Right,
know,
exactly. Well, I mean, Sean, from a technical perspective, explain to me how, because if I'm in a fighting gym or a boxing gym or a kickboxing gym and I'm learning this sport, as a lot of people who may not necessarily train are learning this sport as they watch it as it shows up on Fox and Fox Sports 1 and now Fox Sports 2, Mark Munoz seems to know the kick is coming and get his hand up and still ends up unconscious. How does that happen?
Well, the old-fashioned way of doing it is obviously setting up with a couple of body kicks and then going upstairs to the head.
Right.
Now some guys just look at the legs and then they kick to the head. But realistically, for those kickboxers that are out there, you might know what I'm talking about. There's a way of protecting your head when a kick comes. And you can see there's a picture, I think, when the shin actually connects to the Munoz's head, you can see what Mark is trying to do, but his timing was off.
What's he trying to do? Can you explain it for those?
There's several names for it. In my gym, we call it.
It looked like he was trying to get kicked in the head.
Yeah,
that's what I saw. Yeah, that's a layman's view.
In several gyms, I mean, there's different ways of calling it, but we call it buffer. You buffer the kick, and the way you buffer the kick is, and then it's really hard because Machida's a southpaw. So whoever's throwing, and so basically what I'm saying is when one guy's an orthodox and the other guy's in southpaw, whoever throws the first roundhouse kick, it's going to be from the rear leg, so it's the power roundhouse, and your chest is open to that power side. So if two guys are standing southpaw or orthodox, their backs are facing the
but
roundhouse.
Because okay. These two were not, Munoz is
so
traditional.
So you get that mirror image look. Right. Here comes this kick. Munoz is trying to, and what I mean by buffer, so if he's in the orthodox, his right hand's protecting his head, and then he's supposed to use his left hand, his jab hand, to kind of catch the shin, the foot, the ankle first.
So his left hand should have been farther over so that kick can't sneak up his head.
And if you look at the picture, he actually has his hand down because of the body shots. That's why his hands were down. So everyone, and a lot of people were saying, because I read on the internet, oh, you can never block a kick with just one glove. This is very true. You know, especially when you got a kicker or Chuck Liddell, anyone that kicks
well,
hard.
Well, and if you go back to this photo that you're talking about, which you can find on the Way of the Warrior Facebook page, Lyoto Machida always looks in amazing shape. He looks spectacular
phenomenal.
At 185.
Yeah,
yeah. And that kick photo, the one you're talking about where you can see where Munoz's hands are not in the right place, his leg looks like an aluminum baseball bat.
Yeah. That dude, he was shredded for that fight. I think 85 is the perfect weight class for him.
Well,
yeah.
It looked like he caught him with the shin, and then it kind of rode up where he caught him with a little bit of the heel, too, because of the way he was going.
Yeah. And back to the kick. The cool thing about it, for guys that have been kicking for a long time, You never, and you kind of said this earlier just a second ago, Ken, you never really aim for the head. I know that sounds kind of funny. What you really are aiming for is just above the shoulder, the neck, is what you really want to hit, because typically guys tend to bend their knees and when any time a punch or a kick comes. So if you're aiming just above the shoulder, chances are you'll hit the jawline. If they, like a wrestler, if he gets down really low, you'll probably hit the temple. But Mark got really lower, you know, much lower, and it actually hit the top of his head.
Yeah.
Kind of remind me of Crow Cop back in Pride. You know, how you, I forgot who that guy was wearing that weird mask.
Dos.
I know you
Caracas?
Know.
Yes.
Anyways, not to get off
He's
subject,
in the WWE now.
Right.
I know that.
So. But that, what I'm saying is.
Alberto Del Rio!
That kick, it wasn't just like, oh, body once, body twice, head kick three times. No.
So it's the setup that makes him duck down, because I'm watching it right now as we discuss this too, and you really can see after Sean points that out that right hand goes up, but he's not sure if something's coming to the body,
right.
So he never puts that left hand in the right spot, and that's what allows that kick to ride up and knock him out.
It was a perfect executed kick. Another guy who does it very well, Anthony Pettis. He did it, I guess, with Lozon.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And that kick, here's the rule. Whoever's in front of you, and then that mirror image stance, if you're, you know, orthodox, the guy comes out southpaw, kick him in the head first. Don't wait. Just kick him in the head. He'll respect it. He has to. There's nothing you can do. You can probably duck or get away, but he's not going to shoot a double. He's not going to shoot a single on you. If you kick him in the head, he has to respect it. And Mark never kicked him, and Machida did. And there's your result.
Well, he didn't have a lot of time either. I mean, what was this, 3-10 in the first?
3-10, and it looked to me as if from the word go, and I think Joe Rogan, and I know Ken and I kind of fall into the mythology and the way that the Svengali-ness of Joe Rogan's commentary. He can kind of suck you into the way that you should be watching the fight, because he's very good at that. But in this case, I think he was spot on. There is such a giant difference between sparring with somebody and fighting with somebody that it seemed from the word go that while Machida was nothing but honorable, I mean, he knocked him out and then just waited. He didn't go. He didn't chase him.
Yeah, he kind of walked toward him and almost put his hand back up like Karate Kid.
Yeah, and he waited.
It was like he didn't care if the ref was there or not. He's like, I'm controlling this fight. My buddy's hurt, and I don't need to.
Right, and I think this is over. And unless you tell me it's not, I will punch him once and we will call it a day. But it seemed from the word go that Machida had his number. He knew exactly how to win this fight and was just going to stalk him until that move.
I mean, Eric, you and I've sparred, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. You have shin guards on, and you have headgear, and you got a 16-ounce glove. And when I kick you in the head and you've buffered it, you're like, yeah, that's a strong kick.
Yep.
Now imagine no shin guard, no headgear, and 4-ounce gloves. Come on, man.
Well, and
that's
he's going 100%.
Well, and at 100%, because you're not trying to knock me out.
Well, even if I do kick you 100%. You're not going to get
in a typical training scenario, you're not going at 100% because what would I learn?
But what I'm saying is even in
correct.
You know,
but
parameters. I can kick you 100% and you'll be fine. Well, you won't be fine, but you'll be
right.
Like,
I won't be fine. But
well, you won't be knocked out. If you buffer it correctly, you won't be knocked out.
And
I've done this demo in my classes many times over. I'll pick the biggest, heaviest kicker, you know, or the best kicker. I'm like, hey. Kick me in the head and guys gas out. They're like, I can't kick you anymore. I'm like, yeah, because I'm buffering it correctly.
Right.
But I would never do that if I just had an MMA glove. Oh, hell no.
Right.
I'll die.
Rest of the card came off a little odd. You have this weird moment between Melvin Gillard and Ross Pearson. They will obviously have a rematch once they get through that illegal.
Instant replay, no? Come on.
Yeah. It's certainly a great case for that.
It was warranted that time.
Yeah, it was certainly a great case for that. Do you think it was unjustly stopped?
You know what? I've reffed a lot of times, and sometimes those are really hard to call. And then when you watch it in regular, you know, live, you know, I think the ref did a good job. He had to. But then obviously we get to see the replay. The ref can't. And then obviously it was a legal blow.
Well, we've talked about this too. What do we do with this rule? Because some of us do and don't like it. I figure as long as it's the rule, if a guy puts his hand down, it's a valid part of training. It's a valid strategy when you're up against the cage in those situations. You don't want to get kneed in the head. And a lot of guys say, well, that's not the true warrior spirit. Well, this is MMA. There's rules. There's things
sport.
That happen.
Yeah,
it's a sport. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to say in these situations, in this fight here, where Ross Pearson knew that, and that's why he's putting his hand down. I don't think Melvin Gillard meant anything or meant to do any illegal damage there, but I think clearly he did. You don't see that?
No, I agree with the last statement. I also agree with the fact that he wasn't malicious in it. That's, of course, why they both want to do the fight again. He wants that fight again because he knows how great that fight is going to be. These are two guys who will not put on a bad fight, and I think for Melvin, it's a great chance for him to spotlight his fighting style. That Ross is not a guy who's going to trick him into submissions or anything. That Ross is going to stand in there and fight him.
He just got his blue belt.
Are we officially?
But I mean, he's. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Technically,
yeah.
Why he's?
That's not his game plan.
It's not his game plan. He wants to stand in there and fight you.
We're officially a no contest on that because of that second knee. Am I
correct?
Right.
Yes,
and that was called illegal. And the replays, even when you look at them, you're still not exactly sure.
Correct. And that's why we're calling for an instant replay. They will match up again in February. Right? Is that when they're
going to be in London?
Yeah.
Right.
And so that will happen again. Jimmy Manoa keeps his streak alive, beating Ryan Jimmo by TKO. The most interesting fight on the main card, John Lanker, I referred to him earlier, defeats Phil Davis, TKO. This is a kid who's got power in his hands, but a huge problem. And here is that problem if you don't know him very well. Last three fights he's had at flyweight, he has knocked every one of his opponents out. Last three fights at flyweight, he hasn't actually made flyweight.
He's always at 128, too. You were telling me this story last week.
It's always 3 pounds.
It's always three pounds.
So he's always giving up 20%.
Yes. Huh? But he's a dude that they – I mean, you clearly want him at that division because he solves the problem that Ken has with those smaller divisions, dudes that don't finish fights.
So is it that 3 pounds that makes a difference in being able to finish the fight or not?
Apparently. I mean, it's enough that Dana has never really reprimanded him other than monetarily and said at the press conference, look, dude, you've got to get with Dolce and you've got to get this fixed because – I can't make another concession for you missing another fight at another weight class because you're getting closer to the fact that I need you in a title fight and I can't have you miss weight at that point.
Yeah, people need to understand the difference between weight classes and a catchweight. A catchweight is typically like a reserve, like an emergency, like, hey, we got to save this bout or whatever. So you call in someone and you who's somewhat in shape, but you know he's not going to be on weight. It's typical. It's okay, but you know,
catchweight should be for somebody coming in who doesn't know they have to make that weight in enough
who
time
didn't
to
have
make
enough
that
time.
Weight.
Yeah,
who didn't have enough. Let's say they have literally like less than a week. You know, like 2 weeks. You might depending on if you're year round.
I don't think anybody
not,
would even have a problem if you take a fight on short notice. Let's say 3 weeks no camp. But this guy knows he's fighting at 125 and he can't make 125.
And here would be my point in that. I'm sure you would agree with me, Sean, that those last 3 pounds are probably the hardest part of all the training.
Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah. So you're essentially
it's a mental break.
You're essentially getting to the point where you mentally break and you just can't do it. And, you know, he needs to get that fixed because three KO, you know, KOs at flyweight, you want this guy in a title fight. And then when you talk about Machida, made an instant impact at 185, ranked fifth now already after one fight at 185, and I don't think anyone would dispute that. What's next for him? Well, Dana wants Belfort. Machida says he doesn't think Belfort will take that fight. And then out of nowhere, of course, Uncle Chael comes in this week and says that he wants to fight Belfort. So let's take this one piece at a time.
Chael's got like three fights.
He already has a fight.
He's got two.
He's a genius. Right. He's booked for the next year.
He's the only guy in the UFC ever in history to have two fights inked on paper.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, well, dude, he's fighting Vanderlei.
No, I know that. But is that a true fact? Do you know that for a fact? He's the only guy ever to have two at the same time.
It seems very likely. I mean,
no, I'm being serious.
Well, we need to contact our friends at Elias Sports Bureau. But
he's apparently
look
for
it
a
up,
third.
Man. No, I'm almost positive.
I don't disagree with you. I just think that's an amazing stat, especially when here he is trying to get a third one on the board.
He could not only can he do two, he might be able to do three, and no one will ever touch that.
He
record.
Has to feed his kids. I don't know what's wrong with you guys. Even criticizing this.
But hey, seriously, name one other fighter in the UFC that's had two fights inked on paper.
I believe you.
I totally believe you. But do you think, two questions, Sean. Think the Machida-Belfort fight is good?
Yeah.
And do you think Belfort will take it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You think so?
Because Belfort doesn't turn around. He doesn't walk away from fights.
Yeah, but he's really wanted that. He's wanted that championship fight, and I think Anderson, if Weidman wins, he's going to want Weidman. If Anderson wins, he's going to want that fight back.
What's next for Belfort right now?
I don't think we have anything lined up for Vitor.
But it's because the question is, Anderson has said, I will not fight Vitor again. This is stupid. I won't do this again. So Belfort's kind of hedging his bets, hoping on weekend of New Year's that Weidman wins again so he can go, well, I'm not fighting Anderson. I'm fighting Weidman. But if that doesn't happen and Anderson wins, then it looks like Machida.
Oh, wait. We've got Belfort Henderson coming up here.
Yeah.
That's in 2 weeks.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. Next week. Yeah, 2 weeks. Where are we? Halloween just went. Yeah, next week.
So then in his case, then, yeah, I could see why he wouldn't want to fight Machida, because you're like one more step closer. You know,
he beats Dan Henderson. He's got a legitimate gripe about not getting that title shot, but Anderson said he won't take the fight, so what do you do with him?
See, I think Anderson's got some kind of weird plan, because let's say he does beat Chris Weidman. Then what's Anderson and Machida ever going to do?
Well, they said that they would fight for the title.
I don't buy that.
But regardless of if that's true, we're at this interesting point, and I apologize for not remembering the Belfort fight, but they're moving so fast these days, it's hard to keep track.
We'll see that one. It's on Fox Sports 1.
I couldn't find Fox Sports 2, by the way.
None of us could.
Because it doesn't exist. Okay, so.
Does it exist in the UK or something? Because I remember I was texting him. I'm like, yo, dude, where is this channel?
He texted me on Saturday, and he's like, hey, does this
start? Wait, you were in the UK?
No.
Oh, no. He's like, does this start at 3? Yeah, dude, it starts at 3. He's like, on TV? Yes, on TV. It starts at 3 o'clock.
It would be even more ridiculous if you were in the country, though, where it was, and you still couldn't find it.
Getting back on track, you're at this interesting point, Sean, where if Anderson beats Weidman, he could conceivably walk away if that Jones fight doesn't happen. If GSP beats Hendricks, nobody would say anything if he decided to walk away. I mean, there's the Askren fight that's out there, but
boring.
I don't know that anyone's excited other than Ben Askren about that fight. Yeah. So you've got this cool, interesting thing happening at 170, 185 that two champions might just be like, meh, I've done enough. And if you're watching the primetime of GSP and Hendricks, you can see how intent and nearly psychotic George is about this fight, and I can't imagine doing that for 7 straight years that your body isn't just like, dude, can we play video games or like get a pizza or watch can we do something else, because this is just crazy. And so I don't know, but it seems like, yes, there's some weird plan. If he beats Weidman, does he just go, it's Jones or nothing, guys? Either I'm taking this fight and we're going to answer this question, or I am going back to Brazil and eat all the Whoppers I possibly can. That's what I'm going to do.
I'd love to see the Machida fight, though, because I believe Machida's at the weight he probably should have been for a long time, and he didn't want to be at that weight because of Anderson Silva. Now we've seen him perform there. Machida's got a lot of options here. I mean, going back to the fight that we started the show with, Chris Weidman wins. I think he's almost that immediate challenger. He may almost be that. Belfort may have a case if he has a convincing win over Dan Henderson next week.
If he puts Henderson to sleep, then and because it'll be more recent.
Yes.
A lot of people. Well, and a much
higher caliber of opponent, too. You'd have to say Dan Henderson versus Mark Munoz, as much as we like him. But you've also got Lyoto Machida, who's a former world champion. Vitor Belfort is as well. I'd love to see those two fight each other. I'm not sure where we are with the Black Zillions and where Machida's rolling right now. It's hard to keep track of that for me. I know you guys are a lot more on top of that than I am.
Machida's training with those guys?
No.
Belfort was rolling with the Black Zillions,
right? Oh, yeah. Belfort, yeah. You said Machida, so I was like...
No, but I'm saying, could we make that fight as far as all the Brazilian politics go?
I think you could make that fight, but I think Vitor has a lot more to lose, especially if he's on a tear to try and get back up to that title fight.
Well, if he's on that tear and he wants to get back there, this will be one of the few fights I have a problem with either guy getting a title shot out of the win.
All right, and when we come back, we still got some more stuff to talk about. Junior Dos Santos probably got hit in the head too many times. I will tell you why next. Rampage has another opponent with Tito out, and Johnny Hendricks had a crazy accident happen this week. We'll talk about it all next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Sean Dezay, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. We were talking about Ultimate Fight Night 30, and we move on, or backwards, I should say, to Kane JDS 3. Now, when this fight was over, I don't think any of us had any question about who won the fight. But in an interview this week, Junior Dos Santos came out and said, I quote, "He did not prove he was the better fighter," he being Cain Velasquez. And I don't know, what more does he have to do? And there is certainly some discussion from some people on the internet that talk about how it was a safer way to battle Junior Dos Santos, but that's the point of the sport, guys. The point of the sport is not to stand in the middle, and me knowing that you, Sean, are a kickboxer, to stand in the middle at range and let you throw kicks at my head and see what happens. That is not MMA. That is suicide. MMA would, for me to go, I'm a little bit better at jiu-jitsu, I think, than any of these other places, so let's take it to the ground and find out what happens there and take away your main weapons. That's MMA, right?
Yeah, whatever it takes, whatever your talent is to win your fight.
You haven't been here for a couple weeks, and you saw the fight, I assume.
Oh yeah,
Kane Jr. Dos Santos. Were you upset with the way Kane approached those final rounds? He was clearly ahead. He didn't want to stand in range, obviously, because that was probably Junior's only chance to win at that point. Were you upset because the crowd booed, and a lot of people where I was watching the fight were upset about it? I entirely saw the game plan. I'm not saying he was playing to the crowd at any point. Were you upset with the fact that he didn't go harder for the finish?
No, I wasn't upset at all. I think Kane did exactly what any other champion would have done. The only thing that made me upset was the cornermen didn't throw in the towel.
In the third round.
Yeah, I'm with you. Third round just was bad.
Brutal. Yeah, it's interesting, too. Did you hear what Chael Sonnen had to say about that this week?
No, I did not.
He thinks that Junior Dos Santos lost years off of his career and maybe his life
and
should fire everybody in his corner that
well,
night.
And when you listen to this quote, and I'll read it in its entirety here in a second, you get a sense of this, what this kind of does to your brain. The question is, where do you see yourself in the heavyweight division right now? His answer, I still consider myself one of the main challengers to the title. I don't disagree with that. He, being Kane, showed he had an effective strategy to win the fight. Looking to play it safe, not taking many chances to show he was the better fighter. Blocking my punches in a way that was typical of wrestlers. He applied pressure, grabbing hold of me, avoiding the fight, making the fight boring, making the audience boo a lot. An effective strategy to win, but he did not prove he was the better fighter. Does Junior Dos Santos, A, own a mirror, or B, have... I mean, you're not being self-aware as a fighter. I'm sorry.
I agree with him. He has a job to do in there, Kane. Kane is supposed to make the fight easier for Junior Dos Santos so that everybody's happy.
Right?
Listen, you want to finish fights. And I guarantee you, if there was a moment where Kane could have slipped in a rear naked choke or punched him until the ref. I mean, that in round three when JDS was on his back, I mean, I thought Herb was going to stop it. You know, and then when he didn't, then I was like, dude, throw in the towel because he's out.
Did you think that in the moment?
I really thought that Herb was.
Because we had a lot of discussion about
that. I thought
he
was going to stop the fight when he was on the ground.
He
was out, dude.
We had a lot of discussion in here last week about that because I think a lot of people were retroactively looking at the third round. Like, oh, yeah, he should have done it. And I was curious. And you say in the moment of the third round, first time you watched it, you thought that fight should have been stopped there.
Yep.
Okay.
And Ken, I just think you look at that and it's easy.
Because he actually had his hands on him too, right?
It's easy in retrospect to make that decision. But I mean, you look at him and he is just wrecked. But to this quote that Junior says, look, Kane in the first second of the first round gets rocked by Junior Dos Santos. Junior runs across the ring and nearly knocks him out cold, right? So Kane immediately goes... To Ken's point, not going to play this at range. That's stupid.
So then
he takes him and starts doing his mauling that he does, which is not boring. If you think that what Kane does to heavyweight fighters is boring, you're not really paying very close attention to what he's doing.
Sure.
So he's mauling and sucking the life out and punching. I think at some point it was 40-1 or 50-1 punches to JDS. In the second round, JDS still finds a way to nearly knock him out cold with a short elbow. So you've got a guy who's got to consistently change a strategy because he can't sit there and maul you either because you're still trying to end the fight, which is why Junior is at the top of his game at the heavyweight division, just can't get past this mountain, and it happens at every weight. Talk to Uriah Faber. He'll shellac everybody in that weight class but can't win the title, and it happens. But I don't think that there was anything I didn't see that doesn't prove that Kane is nearly unbeatable right now in the heavyweight division.
Well, there's two things. One, does Kane remember his quote when he said, after the second round, he thought the fight ended.
Junior, not Kane.
I'm sorry, Junior. Junior thought that after the second round.
It was over.
That the fight was over. He doesn't remember 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too.
That's scary, actually.
That's 13 minutes of your life you don't remember.
No, it's very scary, and it's something, obviously, I don't think a lot of people would ever know in the fight. And I think Herb, I'm still not going to be on Herb Dean about that, not stopping. I think you give Junior Dos Santos every chance to win.
Yeah, it's a title fight. It's the ex-champ. I get it, dude.
But I also think
he was out.
That round, too, though, I think is exactly why Kane did what he did in the fourth and fifth. He did everything in that round he could. He might have thrown himself out
Kane did finish him in the fifth.
Well, technically, Junior finished himself.
Yeah. He went for that. ninja choke.
The ninja choke.
Now, here's the thing. To what Kane's saying about fighting and how he was just holding on to me. Look, in boxing, if you clinch like that,
they'll break you up.
They break you up. So JDS should go into boxing, go take care of the Klitschko brothers, and go and do that type of fighting. I guarantee you MMA fans will follow him over into the boxing world.
The job is on you in MMA to get up off the ground, to get outside of the
cage. If you don't like the rules of MMA, don't fight in MMA.
That's on you.
Go to boxing.
Like the guy leaning on you, you can make him stop leaning on you. You're a professional fighter. If he's better at it, and again, like you said, Eric, it wasn't boring, that mauling. I think you can make an argument in those final two rounds that Cain knew where he was and he probably wasn't doing what he did before. But part of that is Junior Dos Santos is a hell of a guy to try to knock out.
And he nearly knocked you out twice already.
Yeah.
Listen, and then because Herb didn't stop it, obviously 4 and 5, there was a couple of bigger punches that JDS was throwing that we were like, whoa, if that landed, you know, but it didn't. All right.
And you get into that.
Was it worth it?
Right. And yeah. you saw it with the Melendez-Diego fight. When Diego's behind on the scorecard, he has to Babe Ruth it. You've got to swing for the fences on everything because you have to end the fight when you're down two rounds to one. And so JDS, knowing that he got mauled in the first, second, and third, knows that the only way he's going to finish it is by either knocking him out. So the fourth, you see him swinging for the fences.
Right.
That doesn't work. He thinks he gets the ninja choke and knocks himself out cold. That said, these quotes that are coming out and him saying, we talked about it last week, thinking it ended in the second, very scary statements at that weight class from a high caliber fighter who should be better taken care of by his corner and his team.
I think he should just, you know, I'm not saying quit MMA, but go over to boxing, get that out of your system. And then come back to MMA. And if you can't deal with wrestlers, then MMA is definitely not your sport. If you can't deal with the wrestling part of it, then don't do MMA because they're all wrestlers.
I'm just getting tired of these guys after fights being mad about it. Like they didn't know going in.
Right.
Like they didn't know going in. Well, and you made a point, Sean.
He's All-American wrestler, man, from Arizona.
Everybody's been talking so much, we forgot he got finished. You're right. Yeah. I forgot he got finished.
No, I thought it was a decision.
He was eking out the win. Oh, no, that's right. He did get finished.
Yeah, he finished him. I mean,
it's a hard guy to finish.
Yeah, and I think that's the first time JDS ever been finished, right, on his record.
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. Kane's got the finish. So, fans, quit crying about it. He got the finish.
And
in a title fight in the fifth round. That's hard to do.
And speaking of speaking of wrestlers, of course, we're gearing up for Hendrix GSP. And this week they were shooting some promo stuff and some of that prime time that they started showing this week. And a very scary accident happened with Johnny Hendrix as one of the lights that the UFC was using gave Johnny second-degree burns on his back.
Like sunburn?
Like sunburn from this light.
Michael Jackson,
second degree,
Pepsi?
Not third.
Second degree.
He's fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right. He had to go to the doctor and get some stuff. But to me, you know, when you're talking about taking care of your fighters, this is a title fight. Shouldn't these?
Okay. Are we really going to blame them? Like, this is a kind of a freak occurrence.
I'm not
going to
blame. No, I'm not going to blame. But like, you know, if you're in television and I've done some TV, you know what those lights can do, and there is a distance that you should be, and it just seems like you don't get second degree burns.
Well, if he was under them all day and they were actually giving him a sun burn, which is what it sounds like, right? And it was just severe, and Johnny didn't notice.
It was severe, and then
I'm not joking. They spray them, those guys, with water the whole time too, so he probably never feels it.
So wait, you're telling me that he got sunburned from nothing exploded and landed on his back? Like he got sunburned because of sunlight exposure?
I believe so.
Well, the light, the TV light exposure. Yeah, I mean, they're very
bright.
What
a white dude. Oh, my God. Are you being serious?
That's the other thing.
You're joking, right?
No.
But could you imagine?
I totally thought like something like the light, because I saw the commercial, and you know how everything's like exploding?
Right.
You know, I thought like one of those lights like fell out, like exploded, landed on his back, and that's what burned him.
No, this is like a sunburn. I've got a picture over here.
Oh, that's what he's crying about. Oh, man.
That's pretty severe.
What a wuss.
Again, I'm the whitest guy on this show.
Oh, my God, man.
I know that
lights,
can be bad.
The second degree burns on his back because the lights
doesn't this guy live in Vegas?
Were placed too close to him. Well, what's interesting, and only
we just got finished with the summer, and it's summertime in Vegas.
He's from Oklahoma. He's from Oklahoma.
This is dumb.
Well, I know, but you want to continue this talk, so I want to play your favorite thing.
This week in George St. Pierre.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy in your head now?
Let me tell you something, uneducated fool.
This week in George St. Pierre.
So, yes, he from not Vegas, but now training in Vegas. And what's interesting, if you've watched,
yeah, he's lived there for about 5-6 years.
Well,
now,
what's interesting, he if you watch Primetime, there's a very crazy scene where they're doing these interviews with George St. Pierre, and George says, so I'm doing press for this thing, and one of these reporters comes up to me and says, hey, did you know that Johnny Hendricks is traveling to Vegas 3 weeks before his fight so that he can train at the camp that he has there in a full-size octagon? And George says, it made me so angry. I literally went out that day and bought a UFC octagon and moved it up to TriStar into my gym.
Okay.
So, well, my point
is... I don't
is,
think he bought it. I think it was...
Somebody bought it, but what...
I think it was just...
Vada? Did Vada buy it, maybe?
Stop.
Too soon? Okay.
Well, just said, here you go.
What's interesting about this fight is that we're seeing more and more that these fighters are able to get in George's head in new and interesting ways. Like, George, you've been defending this belt for 5 or 6 years and haven't needed a full-size octagon, but he thinks that there's any sort of advantage that Johnny could have from being in that octagon longer than him, that he needed to buy one and put it in the gym.
Is that any different, though, than what George St. Pierre has been doing his entire career, is making sure to negate and make any advantage that his opponent has nil?
Is that any different? No. I guess I'm surprised at two things. I'm surprised, number one, that there are still things that can rattle him like that. Because if you see this interview, he's clearly, even still, that he owns the octagon, still kind of rattled. And two, that just seems like a thing that every champion would own in their gym. Am I wrong, Sean? I mean, that seems like the first thing I would buy.
Do you have a full-size cage in your gym? You have a cage.
I have a full-size cage, and I got a full-size boxing ring.
Okay.
I mean, that seems like if you fought in the UFC.
I'm not a UFC champion.
Yeah, but do we know if it was the difference between a WEC cage and a UFC cage?
Where the
difference is minimal there?
What I'm saying is, at TriStar, they did not have a regulation size UFC octagon, and now
they
do.
That big warehouse, they don't have a cage.
They have a cage, but it wasn't.
That's what I'm saying. 32 feet.
Yeah,
right,
this is George St. Pierre, just in his incremental level.
It's this crazy game of inches.
So if I have a 34-foot cage, he's going to go and add 2 more feet to his, or go get a bigger one?
Something like, well, no. He wants the regulation size so that when he's training, his body responds to the size of the cage. I understand the science behind it. I guess what I'm saying is, going back to what I said in segment one, we're at this interesting point where I don't think your brain as a human being can maintain that level of intensity for as long as he has.
You cannot
make all of these really intense decisions for this long without needing a real break. Yeah. You know, it's been, 8 months since he fought Nick Diaz, and that's a break, but he never stops. You know,
that was his last fight?
Yeah, Nick was his last fight.
Really? He didn't fight it?
No.
Man. He needs to fight more. Well,
I don't know that you can.
Champions need to fight more.
They do, but if you're dealing with a champion like this where everything is that intense, I don't know that mentally he can do that.
No, I think George should retire after this fight.
What? He bought a cage. He heard a guy had a cage, probably didn't even spend the money himself.
I understand.
Just like we're blaming UFC for a freak accident burn, and now we're
I do blame
George St. Pierre's done because of 2 feet of a cage.
At least I didn't do what Cage Potato did.
Listen.
Cage Potato reported this is...
It wasn't the UFC's fault that he got sunburned.
Hang on a second. Cage Potato's tease for this story is Johnny Hendricks dives in front of light to save Wussy Champion. Come on. I didn't do that.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. I'll be
honest. There's no way he can blame or anyone can say, yeah, UFC burned Johnny Hendricks.
Can we move on to Tito's head being too heavy for his body? Can we do that?
Okay, no. Yes. Yeah, so last week, after the show was wrapped, it was announced that Bellator is broken.
Oops.
And their pay-per-view was canceled, as it comes at no surprise. Tito Ortiz's neck is still a problem. So he cannot fight.
He knew that.
Of course he did.
He just wanted to get team punishment out there more.
He could not fight, so they had to cancel the pay-per-view and move it to Spike TV, so it's going to be Chandler and McDonald.
Bellator doesn't trust their undercard guys to carry a pay-per-view.
This is probably
the best thing that happened to them, though. Because
what?
Come on. This thing's going to be on free TV now. They're not going to take the bath on pay-per-view that they were going to take before. And it's going to be a situation where they can actually highlight the championship fight as the main event rather than a sideshow attraction in Rampage Ortiz that doesn't matter to any of their divisions. Come on. Do you imagine the money they were going to lose on pay-per-view?
But some of it's already been spent. We learned this at UFC 151. Like, some of it's already been spent.
Some of it's been spent, but you get the TV card out of it, and you don't lose the money you were going to lose on pay-per-view because they had to make a certain amount of dollars. They don't have to pay Tito probably a stupid pay-per-view cut that they probably put in his contract for him, and that's why they put him on pay-per-view. come on, this was an irrelevant fight that didn't really matter. That was going to be a freak show that we all stole. Let's just be honest. We were all going to steal this at best. Steal this at best should have been the name of the pay-per-view. So well, now they're at least just going to put it on TV. And just out of habit, I will probably stream it online, even though I could watch it on my 52-inch plasma in the living room. Just because I'll go, oh, this is what I was going to do anyways. Give me my laptop. That's how I'm going to watch this.
So what website do you use?
Okay. Stealthisatbest.com will be registered by the end of the day.
.net, man. It's speaking, .net.
Speaking
get it right.
A freak show, Rampage has gotten a new opponent. He will be fighting Joey Beltran. So when you want to talk about it, totally.
If he loses to Joey, dude. Because, look, Joey's not a bad fighter.
If you say so.
Rampage isn't a great fighter anymore, though.
I'm just saying, if he loses to Joey, that's not good. Not
all
good.
Right, when we come back, we will wrap up some news and talk about UFC 169, which just got amazing. We'll talk about it next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Sean Dezay of Triumph MMA, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, part of the Fight Fans Radio Network, and iHeartRadio. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook by searching Wow Show. And the show is always brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos. Couple things before we take off today. If you missed the latest in a series of meltdowns of Mayhem Miller over the weekend, he was at a localized MMA show and bumped into Uriah Hall and decided it was the perfect opportunity to become a complete racist a-hole and start dropping N-bombs on Uriah Hall, who eventually punched Mayhem in the face. And then that was broken up, and those two were separated and taken out of the building. And when Dana was asked this week if he was going to reprimand Uriah Hall, instead he opted to give him Fight of the Night bonus.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
I want
Dana keeps it real.
Credit Brent Brookhouse, too, because a lot of people were talking about Mayhem and, oh, God, he's got mental issues and this and that and the other. And Brent tweeted out, and I retweeted this out, I have no doubts that Mayhem has plenty of documented issues with mental illness. It's also entirely possible that he's just kind of a bad guy. And I agree with Brent right there. I don't know what's going on with Mayhem, but as a guy who's probably kind of been a fan of some of the hijinks and some of the things he's done over the past couple of years, you see him here, and I don't know what it feels like when you see your career just slipping away and you've had so many legal problems and so many other issues and you just can't seem to make anything happen. And I feel like he was just squeezed in that moment. And I don't even necessarily know if Mayhem's a racist, but I think he felt like that's how he was going to get a reaction. He had to get a reaction. He in that room was so enclosed in his own mind with what was going on, he had to get a reaction from Uriah Hall and didn't know what to do or how to do it, and that's how it manifested itself. That's how he was going to scrape and cling his way into an altercation and maybe in his mind get another fight. And that's probably a bad way to go about it. So he's kind of a bad guy too. If he has mental issues, I hope he gets help. I don't want to see him in a cage anymore.
He shouldn't be in a cage anymore. He certainly won't be in the UFC. And I guess even if we're going to look at all the obvious signs here and look to your point and say that, you know, he's clamoring for fame, I don't know that a guy who has had two terrible outings in the UFC is the guy that you want to, you know, put your backpack
you're,
on and
you're
roll
assigning
into the
reason to an unreasonable situation, though.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times I like to play on the show. I like to jump into somebody else's world of logic. I feel like it's impossible in this Mayhem situation to do that. You're assigning reason to him. He sees a UFC fighter. I think he's, I don't even think it's fame anymore. I think it's livelihood. I think
no, and I wasn't saying fame like you're going to get on a poster. I mean, like, Uriah Hall is not a dude that you're going to talk yourself into a main event card on a Fox or
right.
Fox 1 or Fox Sports 7.
I agree with you.
You know, because he's Uriah Hall. You know, and nothing against Uriah Hall as a fighter, but it's not like you said that to Rampage.
No. No, I mean, yeah.
I mean, it's horrible whoever you said it to, but I'm not necessarily trying to assign logic. I'm trying to figure out what you thought was going to be the next logical outcome if, in fact, you are thinking that is your moment to make something happen.
Yeah, I don't think he was thinking. I don't think
he wasn't thinking
there was
at
anything
all.
There. I think it's just he's realizing that it's slipped away and it's gone for Mayhem at this point, and he doesn't know what to do about that. Us trying to assign logic to it is not going to work in this situation.
Also this week, in a much happier, less racist note, UFC 169.
How we like to end the shows.
Yes, in much less racist than we started. UFC 169 is shaping up to be absolutely fantastic. We announced, whatever, a month ago probably, that Mir and Overeem had moved to this card. We got excited about this. This is a very cool fight. And then...
Wait, we got excited?
I mean, I did.
Stop it.
I think it's a good fight.
It's a good fight. Show up, and then you can complain about what we get excited about.
Get on the show. Show up every once in a while, and then you can have an opinion. But this week, we got two championship fights, two of which we've been anxiously waiting for. Ken and I have been talking ad nauseum. Is Dominic coming back? Is Dominic ready? Is Dominic going to be there? Well, he is. UFC 169, he will take on Henan Barão and find out which one of those people actually owns the belt.
Nice.
I'm leaning towards Henan, but I think that this is going to be a great fight and something that we've been waiting far too long. 2 years, in fact,
yeah.
To see who
dude,
actually...
Dominic's got his work cut out for him.
That's a long time,
oh,
dude.
Oh, man.
And then another barn burner that if you're not excited about this, you should go watch some Lamas tape because it's going to be a great fight.
Yeah.
Jose Aldo and Ricardo Lamas is going to be another great one. I know not a lot of people have been exposed to Ricardo's fights because most of them been on the undercard. He did show up on the Fox Chicago card and had a stunning performance over Eric Koch, but that might have been the first and only time you've seen him. That's what that guy does. So this could be another fight where you're like, I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone has any answers for Jose Aldo, but this is a win-win for you then if you're one of those people, because if he gets past Lamas, I'm telling you guys, he's gone. He's going to 155. He's going to fight Pettis. That'll be the end of it because there is nothing left at 45 for him.
No, there is no other opponent.
The interesting thing maybe
BJ Penn.
About this card, too, is that it's being billed Aldo versus Lamas, and I don't see that as the main event, especially since it's going to be a unique Super Bowl weekend card.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl is in New York this year, so I think it's great that this is going to be in Newark.
Yeah.
Instead of Vegas, so they're actually going to be in that atmosphere. They're going to be right down the road from the new Meadowlands, right?
Yeah.
Don't you see that Cruz Barão fight as the main event?
Well, I mean, it's going to be really
champion versus champion. It's a weight class that's better known. You know, and I know, Eric, you've been a huge proponent of Ricardo Lamas for a long time before he's worked his way up in the rankings.
To sell a pay-per-view, Ken, I don't disagree with you.
I think it's very interesting that this is still considered Aldo Lamas.
And
as this thing
fleshes out, Ken, maybe we'll see it change. You know, maybe, I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering. Are we waiting for a main event here? And that sounds insane as there's two championship fights on the card.
It does sound insane. But I think we've said this before. A lot of fans are like you. These lower weight classes, not as much of a draw as the bigger weight classes. So
two titles on there.
And we've seen Dominic Cruz every day, essentially, for the past 2 years on UFC Tonight. So
right.
I feel like that should be the main event. We'll see.
We'll see if they change it. We'll catch you this week on Twitter and Facebook. Search WOW Show. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Follow our Twitter account at WOW Show.
Way of the Warrior, it is Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans and Sean Dazay. One last thing before we take off. Big news coming out of the world of UFC as heavyweight Josh Barnett is about to become the first heavyweight in UFC history to undergo WADA, W-A-D-A, World Anti-Doping Association testing in Nevada. It will be the first time that happens in UFC history, and the UFC is going to fit the bill. If you know anything about Josh Barnett, you know this is a big step, especially since one of the times he was pinged for using things that may not be legal, he actually destroyed an entire MMA organization in Affliction. So big stuff ahead of his fight at UFC 168, where he takes on Travis Brown. That will, of course, happen at the sequel between Weidman and Silva. Barnett, of course, wants it to be a big outing as he had a big opening day in the UFC and wants to continue that as he moves closer to the UFC heavyweight title. And part of that will be this WADA testing. Remember, VADA, V-A-D-A, is the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. That's the one that GSP was using in the Hendricks fight that caused the big stir, and Hendricks actually wanted to use this one going through the Nevada Athletic Commission, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency. That is now happening. It is not happening with Johnny Hendricks. It is happening with Josh Barnett. So big stuff coming out of the world of UFC and the heavyweight division, and you can keep up on all the breaking news on our Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior. Have an awesome weekend. Enjoy the first couple days of November, and make sure to fall your clocks back at Sunday, 2 a.m., because we lose an hour. Lose an hour? Yeah. Gain it. I don't know what you do. But clocks go backwards, so you gain an hour. It's Way of the Warrior.